Welcome everyone to session OUC B324, Planning and Deploying Enterprise Voice. My name is Thomas Binder, and we will be talking in the next 1 hour and 15 minutes about how you can create your Link Enterprise Voice environment, how you can be successful with adopting Link telephony. The session objectives are really to talk about what are the different options. We will assume in this session that you have already Link deployed, that you have already instant message and presence, maybe some conferencing, and now you're going to go for the next step. You want to actually replace your PBX, or maybe just enrich your user experience and give some of your users enterprise voice capability. So first of all, we will talk about how you can do that, how you can integrate. We will also talk about what you need to do from a network perspective. Network is one of the crucial parts for every Link deployment. If you go into enterprise voice, it will become even more important. Then we will also concentrate on a pilot. It's always great if you plan ahead and if you make great implementations, great architectures, have a great network, but you need to consider your users and you need to test with your users to get sure that you meet the requirements. After the session, the goal is that you have a clear picture of what the steps are to go from where you're today, no enterprise voice, to where you want to be having enterprise voice. And very important, how you can meet your business, your company, your user requirements doing that. Please note that usually enterprise voice deployment is a multiple weeks to multiple months, maybe even years project. So you will maybe not learn everything in this 1 hour, but you will get a good overview of what you need to do. So agenda-wise, we'll first start about why do you want to do Link Enterprise Voice in the first place. Then we will talk about the Link Voice integration options, so how can you connect it. Then we will talk about specific Enterprise Voice features. What do you need to consider for your users that they will be successful in using Link, that they will like using Link. We will talk about Link and the network. Then we have a quick slide about devices. We'll talk about the pilot, and very important as well, the Link support for voice. So once you have deployed everything, you might want to think ahead, how you're going to support it. Before we jump too much into the topic, I want to introduce myself. My name is Thomas Binder. I'm working for Microsoft. I started in 2007. The first product I worked with was actually OCS 2007, and from then, back then, I worked with OCS 2007 R2, Link 2010, and now we are here with Link 2013. I used to work in local MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services, in Austria. About 2 years ago, I switched teams to an international teams. It's called the Voice Center of Excellence. It's still a part of Microsoft Consulting Services, and if you look at the slide, you can actually see I wrote Communications Center of Excellence. That will be our new name from next year on, basically next week. But that's what we really like in Microsoft, changing names. So now we are the Communications Center of Excellence. Still the same thing. I'm also a Link Certified Master. I'm also a Link Certified Solution Master. It's also a program. Well, it's considered as the most technical program that you can do, the most technical certification on Link, and I used most of the time to instruct there as well. My topics are usually Edge Server, so if you have after the session questions around Edge Server, I'm really happy to talk about Edge Server. There will be also a session tomorrow. Personally, I live in the beautiful city of Vienna in Austria, and in my private time, I like to play field hockey. That's also a topic that we can discuss after the session if you want to. Yes, and there's also my contact detail, tbinder@microsoft.com. It's my email and instant message, my SIP address. So if you want to contact me, this is a good way to find me. Okay, now let's start with the real content. So why Link? To me, sounds like a stupid question. Link is fantastic, isn't it? But if you want to introduce Link in your environment and do more than just instant message and presence, more than just conferencing, if you want to go for enterprise voice, then this should not be just a technical question. Well, Link, it sure gives you a lot of features, but it needs to make sense for your business. So it needs to be a business-driven conversation where there is a true benefit, where you can reach different things, and we are going into this in the next slide, actually in the slide after this one. But there needs to be a clear direction. That must not be just a technical exercise that you want to do, that you want to offer. You need to find out where's the benefit for your corporation. And in order to do that, you need to have someone, in order to be successful in Link, you need to have an executive sponsor in your corporation. So what's this executive sponsor? It's usually a person that has enough power in the organization and also the budget to make a transformation happen. Going from a traditional environment where you have your Windows Server people and where you have your PBX people to a Link environment where you have now Windows Server people who do telephony will most often mean a large change in the organization. It's actually a transformation of your business. People who did telephony before, they need now to work with Windows servers. The other way around, Windows Server people need now to work with telephony. And we have seen, just from our experience, that in a lot of customers, these are two completely different departments. Most of the time, from the organization, it's also completely different. So typical setup would be international company. IT is managed centralized, so the IT is deploying Exchange server for everyone. However, telephony is really done per subsidiary. Each country can do their own telephony solution. So if you now coming from the Windows Server side and say, well, we are going to introduce this new service and we are going to take over telephony, then you will have a bad time if there is no one in the organization who has the power to make this transformation happen. So it's very important, it's crucial for the success that you find this executive sponsor who is appropriate, who is accountable, and whose personal goal it is to create this Link Enterprise voice. So how do you get this person motivated to be the executive sponsor? Well, you need really to find out what are the business drivers to introduce Link. Why do you want to have Link Enterprise voice? If you don't have a good answer for that, then probably it will be hard to get budget. So, and there are all different things. Some might apply to your company, some might not, some might just apply to parts of it, or a combination of all. But it's like enabling mobile workforce. Looking at the mobile clients that we have now, you're reachable all the time over voice over IP with your Link phone number, having your phone on your laptop. So I'm now here at this conference in Madrid, still I get all my phone calls, I can still call from my phone number, so it's perfect. Might not apply to other companies. For other companies, it might be more important to just, in general, increase productivity by making it easier for people to connect to other people and to find an expert for something. It can mean shorten your sales cycle because now communication became much easier. There's also this whole cost-driven thing. You can decrease communication costs, you can decrease operational costs, travel costs, very important. So I've been working with company in Austria. They are distributed all over Austria. And they used, every week, someone was getting into a train, driving 4 hours from Kärnten, which is a small city in Austria, to Vienna, which is, well, it's a larger city in Austria. So he spent 8 hours every week in a train. Now, they introduced Link. They had this collaboration. Were able to cut this travel cost down because now he travels only 1 month or every second month. It's still good if you meet from time to time, face to face. So I don't want to say that Link should replace all the travel. It will just help you to cut down costs. UC enable your business. Integrate Link in your line of business applications and provide additional services, additional features, and so on. This slide, I know it's a little bit busy. There's a lot of content. It shows from all the case studies that we have done with real customers. So these are all real numbers, and you can find all these numbers on our website. So in the very fine print on the bottom, you can see www.microsoft.com/case-studies. You can search there for Link, and then you can find case studies from customers, what they achieved with Link. And you can see here a lot of costs that they were able to cut down. For example, at the very top, reduced travel costs, 5 to 30%. Something different, audio conferencing charges. We have seen a lot of projects where the audio conferencing providers they were using before introducing Link were actually so costly that just by replacing the audio conferencing, all the Link project, including services, including the servers, including licenses, was already paid off. If you are able to find these numbers in your company, you will have a very easy time to get budget for your project. And it goes on, telephony charges, just improving end-user experience, being a more attractive workspace, attracting talent. So we have here attract and retain employees. Being more effective in shortened sales cycle, complete projects faster, and so on. Obviously, all of this will vary per company, and you will probably not end up with the highest numbers everywhere, but maybe somewhere in the middle. But it is a good starting point to figure out, what do I need to look at? Where is the money hidden? Where can I get it back? Okay, so now we found out why we want to have Link. Now let's talk about how we can link, integrate Link into our telephony. I want to start here with the Open Interoperability Program. I hope everyone is aware that Microsoft has this program. And what we are basically doing is we're testing all kind of equipment if it's compatible with Link. And it's not Microsoft doing the tests. It's actually the vendors are doing tests with a third party test center. And they will verify if everything works with Link or if there are any problems. On this website, you will find all the IPPBXs, all the gateways, the survivable branch appliances, we'll talk about them in a second, session border controllers, hardware load balances, and so on. And you will find out if they are qualified against Link, if they work with Link, and if there's any special configuration nodes. If you want to integrate Link with PSTN, we want you to always use only vendors listed on this website with the specific products, with the specific version numbers, so that we can get sure that your user experience will be good. Now we have different options how we can integrate PSTN into Link or Link into PSTN. And it really depends what you want to achieve. So we will talk about these four options, and I will explain them in detail. But in the end, there is no one that's the best one, and there's no one that's the worst one. It's really the question, what do you want to achieve? What is your strategy? Do you want to remove your old PBXs as quickly as possible? Do you just want to have Link for a few users and want to enable these few users to work on Link, but you want to retain your PBX because some workflows, some users are really dependent on the old PBX? Or do you want to have a smooth transition over 1 year, 2 years, 5 years? We will start with the one where Link is just connected to the legacy PBX directly. And that's one that actually most of the customers start with because it looks easy. As you can see here in the diagram at the top, we have the PSTN, the little cloud. There is an existing PBX connected, and that's basically your starting point, and then you're going to integrate Link into this PBX. We will take a look at the next slide how this integration could look like, but just from the principles, you get here a lot of benefits, but also some disadvantages. The benefits are that the PBX is still owning the numbering plan. So there's not a lot of change on the PBX required. You have your PBX, you know it works because it worked for 10 years, and you add your Link, and you don't need to make a lot of changes. Whenever you move a user from the PBX to Link, the user can keep the phone number, which is a huge benefit because they don't need to print new business cards. Other users who call them can still reach them, so it makes it quite easy for the user. You will have to change the configuration, obviously, every time you move a user from the PBX to Link to tell the PBX, well, this number is not hosted on the PBX anymore. All calls to these numbers you need to forward to Link. In Link, you just enable the user. Internal calling will be at no cost. So all the calls from a Link user to a PBX user, you don't pay for any trunks. Well, you have the connections there. You don't have to pay anything extra. You can benefit from your existing PBX infrastructure, so if you have a distributed PBX infrastructure over different countries and they use least cost routing and so on, you can still use that. You just, from Link perspective, send the call to the PBX, and the PBX does what it always does and routes the call somewhere. The trunks, between the existing PBX and the PSTN, you can keep them the same as they are. You don't need to have any additional trunks because basically you are having the same number of phone numbers still. So we don't expect any large increase. There might be some if you decide to deploy dial-in conferencing and your users are doing a lot of dial-in conferencing, then you might need to add trunks there. But this is really a new feature that you would add. This solution has a lot of disadvantages from a link perspective. And it depends on what you want to do. If you want to migrate away from your PBX and you want to go to link, you should not do that. Because we talked about between the PBX and the PSTN, you don't need to add any additional trunks. Well, but all the trunks between the PBX and link, you need to create them. And that might mean that you have to invest now in your PBX. So if you want to migrate away from the PBX, now you need to make a new investment into the PBX to make that work. Doesn't sound like the best idea. Additionally, the PBX will be always in the call path. It will be always there. So eventually, if you have moved all the users from the PBX to link, the PBX is still there. And then you need to change your configuration, and then you need to remove the PBX, which might be some additional effort. From the perspective how this is technically achieved, we have basically two options. On the top, you can see what we call direct SIP. You can do that if your PBX is actually an IP PBX and if it has been qualified in the UC OIP program to work with link. Then you just create a trunk from the link mediation server to the PBX and you don't need any additional equipment. If your PBX is not qualified, or if it isn't even an IP PBX, it's an old TDM PBX, then you need to use a qualified gateway. Again, all of those are listed on the OIP website, and the qualified gateway will work as a back-to-back user agent, and it will do all the signaling translation, it will do the transcoding for the media, and things like that, so that you can, from SIP, go to whatever you have on the far end. Second option, connect directly to the PSTN. So as you can see here, on the left side, we have our PSTN, and there's the traditional existing PBX, and now we add link. However, link is not connected to the PBX, it's connected directly to the PSTN. There are quite a number of benefits from that. It's easy and fast. You just provision your link servers, you connect it. We will have a follow-up slide how you can connect directly to the PSTN, but you don't need to use any interfaces into the PBX. So you don't need to talk to anyone on the PBX side and say, well, please manage this, make these changes, make these configuration changes. There's no additional investment in the PBX. So if you have this approach and you migrate users from one system to the other, eventually if no users are left on the PBX, you just turn it off. You don't need it anymore. The disadvantage is that in most cases, this will mean the user will get a new phone number. There might be providers that actually allow you to, well, change the routing so that you tell the provider, okay, I have this phone number. It's here on this trunk where my traditional PBX is. Can you please, from now on, change the routing so that it goes to my link server? Yes, you can do that. Question is always, how much is it going to cost? How much overhead from a process point of view will you have? So in the most of the case, I would say that means a new phone number for the user. Other disadvantage is that now for an internal call from a PBX user to a link user, this call needs to go to the PSTN. That might mean that you have now to actually pay for internal calls. Again, there might be providers who are saying, well, both your environments are hosted by our company, so we will give you internal calling for free. But this is something that you have to arrange with the provider. You don't need any additional trunk capacity on the PBX side. Obviously, all the trunk capacity on the link side needs to be added. Eventually, you will be able to remove trunks on the PBX side because there are less and less users, so they don't need trunks anymore. And then you add them over to the link side, and then you get there more and more trunks. There are, again, two ways how you can directly integrate your link into the PSTN. And the one would be, again, using a qualified gateway. So go to the UCOIP website, find a gateway. It will do all the translation between whatever connection you have, let it be BRI or PII, coming in, going to the gateway, and translating that to be understandable by link. The second option is to use actually a SIP trunking provider. So a service provider who gives you a SIP trunk from the cloud so that you can connect to the SIP trunk and get all your phone services from there. Here at the bottom, you can see one example what it could look like. So on the very left, you have a link pool, you have your mediation server, and then it depends on the specific implementation of the SIP trunking provider. So some SIP trunking providers, they might position a VPN router on your side, in your environment, create a VPN tunnel to their environment, have the router there, and then they have some kind of session border controller, some gateways, and will connect you to the PSTN. There are also some SIP trunking provider, they will just put an SBC, session border controller, directly in your environment. It depends on how they do it. But for you as a customer, you can probably see this as a black box. SIP trunking providers, they are also qualified in the UCOIP program, so I think there are, well, actually quite a lot at the moment who are certified, so that you know up front, yes, they have done this before, they know what to do, and they have documentation. In terms of additional benefits, SIP trunking gives you a lot of additional benefits. First of all, it will give you a lot of flexibility in terms of numbering. If you're in a business where you need to provision suddenly 100 new users because of some seasonal event, and after that you can deprovision it, SIP trunking providers allow you to do that. You can really just create new phone numbers on the fly, just pay what you use then. It also enables you, and we've seen a lot of customers who are using SIP trunking that way, to centralize everything, saying, well, we have one central location, and this central location has the SIP trunk, and all the other locations getting their phone services from this central location. Might raise the question now about survivability of branches, and we will talk about that in a few slides. Another benefit that you could get from this is disaster recovery. Let's assume the following situation. You're a big company in Spain, so you have a data center in Madrid, and you have a data center in Barcelona. And you have deployed in both of the data centers Link, you have paired the pools, so that if you lose one data center, you can fail over all the users to the other data center, and they will still get the services. However, on the good day, all the calls from the SIP trunking provider to a phone number in Barcelona goes to the Barcelona pool from the SIP trunking provider. All the phone calls to Madrid users go to the Madrid pool. Now the catastrophe happens. The Madrid pool goes down for some reason. You do the failover. All users are failed over to the other location. They get again all the link services. However, the phone numbers are still going to the Madrid side. SIP trunking providers are able to just change this on the fly and say, well, we can just fail over all these incoming calls to go to Barcelona. So you inform the SIP trunking provider about that. You do the failover, and within a specific time, it's recommended to set some service level agreements with the SIP trunking provider, how fast they can do that. But within that time, they will be able to fully restore your telephony capability. And this is something that you cannot get if you connect directly over PRIs or BRIs into the PSTN. Next option, the drop and insert. So in this case, you have also your PSTN and your PBX and you have your link server, and you take one of these qualified gateways and you put it between the existing PBX and the PSTN, and you connect your link server to it. And again, you get a number of benefits for that. Gateways, most of them, talk to the vendors who provide the gateways, can give you Active Directory-based routing. So let's assume a phone call comes in from the PSTN to a specific phone number. It goes to the gateway. The gateway can then look into Active Directory, find this phone number, and see if it belongs to a user who is enabled for Enterprise Voice. If the user is enabled for Enterprise Voice, this is the Enterprise Voice phone number, so it sends the call directly to Link. Link user gets the call and is happy. If the phone number does not belong to an Active Directory, well, to a Link Enterprise Voice enabled user, well, then it just goes to the existing PBX. And that will make it very easy to migrate from one solution to the other, because you don't need to do any changes in the routing on the gateway itself. It will just get the information from Active Directory. Yes, sure. If you move a user from the PBX to Link, you will still have to configure in the PBX that this user is not hosted, this phone number is not hosted there anymore, and then you need to move it. This, I just answered the question that what was not even asked. Perfect. So that makes it easy to migrate users. You will be able to keep your number. Internal calling at no cost. Every time you go from Link to PBX or the other way around, it just goes over your gateway, doesn't need to go to the PSTN. From a Link perspective, also configuration is really easy. You just enable the user for Enterprise Voice, you assign the number, and the Link configuration side is done. You don't need any additional trunks from your gateway to the PSTN, because that already exists. And I haven't added that to the slide, but when we talk to customers about this option, they are always a little bit, most of the time, a little bit careful, because the PBX they have, it just works. Used to work for 10 years. And now we want to introduce in this critical path between the PBX and the PSTN a new component, a gateway. Well, it's an appliance. We've seen them failing very, very rarely. So personally, I wouldn't be concerned about that. There are options to have standby gateways and so on. But I understand the customer that they don't want to change anything existing to something that might fail. Luckily, these gateways are configured in a way, are built in a way that if the gateway would lose power, if the gateway would fail, they would just route all the incoming calls physically to the outgoing trunk. And in this case, all the calls would go to the existing PBX. And, well, yeah, all your Link calls would fail. But your existing environment, you don't need, it will not affect any availability there. So what are the disadvantages? The gateway needs to be sized as well for all the internal calls. So now you will end up with a much larger gateway, or more gateways, than in the other cases, because every call coming from external to either Link or the PBX will be going over the gateway, and also every call from Link to the PBX will also go over the gateway. So you might end up here with a slightly larger footprint on the gateway side. And again, changing a user will require you to change this user in the PBX. Then, and this is basically the only new option that we have with Link 2013. All the other options were possible in Link 2010 as well. You could decide to directly connect Link to the PSTN and then use a connection and then connect the existing PBX to Link. The benefits are Link owns now the dial plan. It will be very easy to phase out the PBX. It's very easy to migrate the users. You will keep, they will keep their numbers, and internal calling is at no cost. The disadvantages are you need to change your whole PBX topology. So what you have, what you had, what used to work, it's changed now, and you need to rely on Link. You will require some gateways for the PSTN, or you can go for SIP trunking, but you will also require gateways to the PBX side. And if you now think about all the different options we talked about, it really depends on what your goal is, what you want to achieve. Do I want to move away from my PBX? Do I want to keep my PBX? And this example, I would do that if I'm sure that I want to quickly move away from my PBX, and maybe I'll do this just in smaller locations where I have, I don't know, 50, 200 users, something like that. And for the larger locations, I can do different approaches. I don't need to do the same approach in every location. You might also end up here with, I always spoke about, you're going to phase out the PBX. Maybe you decide that for some reason you need to keep the PBX because there are some elevator phones, there are some faxes that require the PBX to be there. Yeah, then just keep it, just downsize it, whatever your requirements are. So I just mentioned that this, where you put Link server between the PSTN and between the PBX, is new in Link 2013. The feature that we use here, we call it session management or intertrunk routing. It's just that Link will now accept an incoming call, look into how it should be routed. You can apply usages. That means you can do authorization. You can control which numbers can be called that way. And we'll route it out to another trunk. In Link 2010, Link 2010 would just drop the call and not route it at all. All combinations are possible, incoming PSTN calls to an IP PBX, outgoing IP PBX calls to PSTN, or you can also connect two or more IP PBXs via Link, Link being the middleware, the umbrella that collects all of these connections. Here's a small, and it's really small, diagram on how this could look like. I'll start with the left one, and basically the left one and the right one are very, very similar. On the left one, you can see on the very left side the PBX users. They have phones. These phones are connected to a qualified IP PBX that's connected via trunk to the mediation server. The mediation server is connected to a pool. And then we can see next one is, again, a mediation server. Could be the same mediation server, actually, connected to a different qualified IP PBX. And then we have our PBX users. For the calls, all the signaling will go from the PBX to the mediation server, to the pool, back to a mediation server, to the IP PBX. The media itself can do media bypass. If the IP PBX is support media bypass, we can send the media directly from the one qualified IP PBX to the other. So we will use a SIP refer header to do that. They need to support it, but this means, in this case, Link doesn't need to touch the media. That means we don't need to increase the footprint of our mediation servers. On the right side, very similar concept, but just on the very far right, you can see that there is not another IP PBX. It's actually a qualified gateway that is used. Again, we are doing here the media bypass, and it goes to the PSTN there. So it turns out that voice resiliency is quite important for our customers. They are just used to phones to work, and if everything else breaks, they still expect phones to work. So voice resiliency is one of the most important things that you should think. And actually, I will say this about a couple of different things, but yeah, it is one of the most important ones. We still have our failover automatically, as we had it in Link 2010. If you have two link pools and they are paired to each other, so I go to my topology builder and pair one pool to the other, and I lose one of the pool, the users can still, they will automatically re-register against the other pool after a certain timeout that you can configure. They will register against the other pool, and they will connect in the so-called survivability mode or limited functionality mode. That means they don't get a lot of the link features. They don't get any conferencing. They don't get any contact list. They cannot search for contacts. However, they can still do phone calls. So fully automatically, users fail over. They can still do phone calls, and their telephony will still be available. Then at a later point of time, if the administrator decides, well, that's actually a disaster, I should initiate a failover, they can do the failover, and then users fail over with their complete functionality, and now they get on the failover pool all the other features as well, contact list, conferencing, and so on. So the question is, if I have an idea what the failover time is for voice from one pool to the other, and this is actually configured in the topology builder. You can set it up there. I believe that the default is 600 milliseconds, which would be about 10 minutes. It could be also 300 milliseconds. But if you follow up with me after the session, then we can just look it up. And then we have this solutions for branches, where we can have a survival branch appliance and survival branch server as branch solutions. And I'll go into detail right now. A survival branch appliance, it's basically a gateway, Link certified gateway, that at the same time runs a Windows server. And on this Windows server, there's Link software. and this link software provides a registrar and a mediation server. You put this survival branch appliance into your branch office. If you ever lose your data center, the connection to the data center, you pull in your data center, the clients can still register against this SBA, and they will get this reduced functionality mode. The important thing is they can still do phone calls. Very similar to the SBA is the survival branch server. The difference is the survival branch server does not run on a gateway. It's a regular Windows server that you have in your environment and that has all the functionality of the SBA except for the gateway. So if you deploy an SBS, you always need to, in addition, deploy gateways, or maybe you do SIP trunking, then you need to deploy whatever your SIP trunking provider requires. For the branches, yes, this will allow you that users can still do phone calls if you lose the connection to the pool. But the question is then always, where do I start? Who needs to have this kind of survivability? The first question that I usually ask, is your WAN redundant? If your network is redundant, then you should not consider any branch as a branch. Because if you basically never lose your network, then you're never, you will be never in the need to provide any survivability for this. You can just use the survivability that you provide for your central pool as well. So if you have a redundant WAN, you will not need any SBA or SBSs. The next question is, how many users do you have in the site? And actually, if you look into the official Microsoft documentation, it will tell you, well, if you have this number of users, I believe it's about 25. If you have 25 users, you should deploy an SBA. Doing this just number-driven makes kind of sense because it sounds like an easy rule, but what you should really ask is, how important is telephony for these users? If I have a site where five users, and these five users receive all the sales calls, and I cannot sell anymore if these five users don't have telephony anymore, well, then they are important enough that I put in an SBA just for these five users. Or maybe my CXO is sitting in this site. Then I want to get sure that this person can always do the phone calls. On the other side, I might have a site with 100 users, but these 100 users, well, they are working anyway most of the time on other stuff, not phone-related. They might not even realize if the phone system is not working for a day. So if I have these kind of users, then obviously I don't need to provide any resiliency. Very important, if I want to do any resiliency, I need to have local PSTN, because there's no use of having this SBA or SBS if there's no PSTN breakout. Also, all these SBAs are qualified in the UC OIP program, so get sure that you pick one of those. If you now know how you want to integrate Link into your environment, the next question is, well, do I need to deploy dedicated mediation servers, these servers that connect my Link environment to the PSTN, or can I just co-locate them on my front-end servers? And the important factor for this is, well, how many calls does the mediation server need to process? I mentioned media bypass earlier, and let me just go to the next slide to show it. I mentioned media bypass earlier, and what it is doing is you need to have a gateway or IP PBX that is qualified for media bypass, and then the Link client will send all the signaling still to the Link environment, to the mediation server, from the mediation server to the front end, from the Link to the front end to mediation server to gateway, but the media will go directly from the Link client to the gateway. And now that means much less load on the mediation server. Mediation server can support many, many more calls that way. If you look into the documentation and look with a standard server hardware that we recommend, a co-located mediation server can support up to 150 calls that are not using media bypass. A dedicated mediation server can use 1,500. However, even if your gateway, if your IP PBX supports media bypass, it does not mean that it will always happen in your environment. There are scenarios where we are not doing media bypass. For example, the audio-video MCU, the component that runs the conferences, does not support media bypass or does not do it. So if you have dial-in conferencing and dial-out conferencing, all these calls, phone call to the conference or phone call from the conference, all these calls will go to your mediation server and will be processed there. Remote users. If a user connects over the Edge server, there is no media bypass. All the media goes to the Edge server, from the Edge server to the mediation server, and then the mediation server processes it, and only then it goes to the next hop. Also, if you apply call admission control, we will be talking about call admission control in a later slide, it enables you to control how much bandwidth Link can consume. If you enable call admission control and users are sitting in other sites than the mediation server, then media bypass will not be applied. So it's not really only about is media bypass possible or not. You should also think in your environment, how much media bypass do I expect to happen? How many calls will I have? And this is how you can start planning out your mediation servers. Obviously, you will start with assumptions, hopefully with very good assumptions, but you should monitor this very carefully because assumptions have the tendency that they are not 100% true. So get sure that if you reach any limits, that you add additional mediation servers or maybe start deploying dedicated mediation servers. Okay, so now we should have an idea how we can integrate Link with the PSTN. Sounds pretty simple so far. Well, actually it isn't, but we had nice diagrams. Very important is also to think about what else do I need? What features do I need to provide to my users to make them successful? It could be that you create great architecture, you integrate it into your PSTN, everything works fine, but it's just in the details that users cannot do something they need to do, and it's important that you collect all these requirements. We'll just start with a few of the most important ones. Exchange UM is the only voicemail solution for Link. If you don't deploy Exchange UM and someone calls you on your Link phone number and your computer is turned off, they will hear busy signal, which is not a really good experience. It will confuse users because they will think, well, the person is there, he's just busy. So I would say a Link enterprise voice implementation without Exchange UM is incomplete. I would not recommend to ever do that. Exchange UM gives you a bunch of additional features. It's your single store for email and voicemail, so I can get all my voicemail to my inbox. That means I can see them on my mobile phone if I synchronize my emails. I can listen directly to them. We have text-to-speech, where Exchange server tries to guess what the other person said and writes it down. Call answering, auto-attendant, Outlook voice access, and so on. You can decide to either have your Exchange on-premises, or you can go into a hybrid configuration where you have Exchange either hosted by a partner or by Office 365. However, for every user, this user must be completely hosted in one Exchange environment. So if you want to do Office 365 for a user, Exchange UM and the Exchange Mailbox, all these services will then come from the cloud. So there's no option where you can say, well, I just take the UM servers. It will be the full Exchange. Using call admission control. So call admission control is a feature that will allow you to configure to let Link know what your network looks like. So what links do you have between specific sites? What are the sites? What are the subnets? And then you can apply policies and says on a specific link, that is network link, on a specific network link, I want to allow only 10 calls at the same time. The benefit is that this will protect your environment from oversubscription. It's based on the subnet of the endpoint, so this is location dependent, so if I travel from one location to the other location, I will get the call admission that is specific for that location. If you have if you have a link where you want, network link, where you want to allow 10 calls at the same time, and these 10 calls are already happening, and you don't do call admission control, if user number 11 wants to do a call, you don't have call admission control, they just do a call, it will go through. That's bad because you have bandwidth only for 10 calls, but now you have 11. Maybe 11 is not so bad, but then user number 12 comes, user number 13, and eventually everyone whose call goes over this network link will have a bad experience. So it's not only user number 14 who will have a bad experience, but user number 14 will actually steal from all the other users the bandwidth, and all of them will have a bad experience, so everyone will suffer. If you have call it mission control, there are different features, different possibilities how you can control it. First, you can reroute via the edge server. So again, the example, think about it. I have my data center in Madrid. I have my data center in Barcelona. Both data centers have link servers and have edge servers. The user from Barcelona calls the user in Madrid. The direct path, there is no bandwidth available. So CAC responds, this link should not be used. Then they will just go over the edge server, send the traffic over the internet, and they will still have the call. If this is not possible, then you can decide to have a reroute via PSTN. Again, users from Madrid wants to call the user in Barcelona. There is no bandwidth, so the user from Madrid sends the call to the PSTN, goes to the PSTN, and then comes into the Barcelona mediation server. You can enable or disable this for users in the user voice policies. So if you don't want to have reroute for all the users, you can do that. And finally, if this is also not possible, the call will be just blocked. Yes, I understand it's not a good experience if you want to call someone and you can't, and you will get an error message that will tell you that your network is not, that there is not enough bandwidth available. But it's basically the same as you have it today in a traditional PBX. If there is no trunk available, you cannot call. This one user might have a bad time, but all the other 10 users who are on existing calls, they will have to have a great user experience. Yes, please. The rerouting via PSTN, does it need any configuration on your provider? No, it does not. So what it really does is, I want to call you. So I click on my contact list on you, I try to call you, and we're in the same company, so Link knows you're a SIP-enabled user, tries to call you on your SIP address. Now we get back the information, well, there is no bandwidth available, and then it will decide reroute via PSTN. Now it will try to call you on your enterprise voice phone number. And so my client will initiate a new call to your phone number, will tell Link, don't do the reverse number lookup because I don't want to call the SIP URI, I really want to call the phone number. Then it will look into my configuration if I have a usage and route that allows me to call this number, and will just send it locally from my route that I use to the PSTN. So it goes to the PSTN. Once it is in the PSTN, it's just handled like a regular call that goes to your phone number. So it will be sent to your mediation server, and then your mediation server sends the call to you. Another very important topic is emergency calling. So a lot of countries have special requirements, legal requirements, how emergency calls to the police, to the hospital, to the firefighters, how they should be handled. Very important first step is find out what these legal requirements are. And then Link will offer you a number of different options. So with the location-based routing and with the emergency calling, we can route calls based on the location that you are in. So I travel to Spain, I call an emergency number, Link recognizes, hey, that's an emergency number, uses in Spain, so I need to call to route this call within Spain to a specific location. We do have the E911, the enhanced 911 for North America. They have very special requirements where you need not only to send the call, you also need to send a lot of meta information like the address of the user, the exact location. We can do that as well. And we have E-Link gateways that also might meet your requirements. The way E-Link gateways works, they are also qualified gateways. You do an emergency call. Link realizes, hey, it's an emergency call, user is in a specific location, I need to route it to this specific gateway. The gateway sees, hey, this is an emergency call, and will replace the caller ID with a different caller ID that can be mapped to the location where you are. So when the emergency service provider gets the call, it doesn't see your DID, it sees a DID that belongs to this location, and this way they can identify where location, in which location you are. In some countries, user education might also be an alternative. If you educate your users in case of emergency, don't use Link, use your cell phone, use the common area phone, or anything else, it might be also an option. Just get sure that you collect these requirements, that you understand what are what does the law says about it, so that you're not on the hook if something happens. Delegation is another great topic. So in Link, we have this delegation option. So I can say, well, my colleague is now my delegate, and all my calls should not go only to me. They should also go to him, or they should go only to him, and so on. Very easy for me to use, because I know how to do Link. It's great for me. I don't need to call an administrator and tell the administrator to set this up, and can have control over my administration settings. We have seen, especially in Europe, in a lot of projects, that this does not meet what companies expect, especially those people who have actually assistants. They usually do stuff like running out of the office and yelling to the assistant, take all my calls for the next hour. So now the assistants need to make this change happen. In Link, out of the box, we can't do that. However, there are a lot of partner solutions that can help you, that allow the assistants to actually control that. There are a lot of IP phones that will allow you to add additional buttons, and that will give you functionality where you can delegate and get calls from other people. And these are just the most common, but there's even more. And it's very important, before you introduce Link Enterprise Voice in a location, go to this location, collect all these requirements, and understand what they need. Do they need response groups? What do we do about unassigned numbers? Are there any legal requirements? So far we spoke about emergency calling, but there might be legal requirements for compliance and for recording. Link, out of the box, doesn't do any recording, of course. Yeah, well, you can do a client-side recording, but depending on what vertical you're in, depending on the country you're in, you might have to record all the calls with certain customers. There are a lot of third-party solutions, so I'm confident that every requirement can be met. Just get sure that you identify these requirements. Okay. Let's go into the next topic. Now we also know what we want to deploy. Now let's talk about our infrastructure, Link at the network. In Link, the network is a very, very important component. It will directly impact your user experience if your network is not ready for real-time communication. You might have had a great network, everything is working, but real-time communication, it's just different because it's, well, real-time. If you have delay for your emails, if the email is a few seconds late, no one will ever notice. If you have a phone call and you have a delay that's about a second, it's impossible to have this phone call. Your users are used to have phones that just work. You pick them up for 100 years, you just talk, everything works. If you provide them now a new phone and this new phone does not work, they will try it once, they might try it a second time, maybe a few will try the third time, but if you don't get it right, it will not be a success. If you want to do a network assessment, and this is very much what Microsoft Consulting Services does, there is an offering I will talk about. I have a slide for that as well. But you can go also to other vendors to do your own network assessment. These are just the principles that we understand you should do in your network. First, you need to do a discovery. What is my network? What does it look like? What's the usage? Then you need to do some bandwidth planning. So what do I expect Link to do? Then, after I know what I need to expect, I need to do a simulation. In my production network, during production time, to verify that my assumptions are correct, to verify that the network can handle what it should be. And then finally, I can adjust my environment, meaning I can upgrade my network, or I change my Link deployment, and so on. First, discovery. We usually recommend to collect the usage information of your network for the last 3 months. Depending on your company, it might make sense to include even more. So for companies that are very seasonal, like you have at Christmas, you have more business than in other seasons, then you should get this really this phase where you have the most business. You should get the busy hour traffic. So during a day, usually there's 1 hour with more calls than in all the other hours. What's the traffic there? Because this is what you need to model for. Then you need to think about your quality of service strategy. Do you have already one? Is quality of service used? If yes, how is the traffic tagged? What classes do you have? How many bandwidth do you allocate? And finally, the network topology. Do I have a central MPLS and everything is a star? Or do I have different hubs? What does my network look like? Once I know this, bandwidth planning is the next step. There is a tool from Microsoft. Actually, my team developed that. It's the bandwidth calculator that will ask you for which sites do you have, how many users do you have there, what's the expected usage model. And you can say, well, these users have so many video calls, they have so many audio calls, so much conferencing. You enter all this information. It will also ask you, well, what's the bandwidth between your sites? And then it will tell you if a link is already oversubscribed or if there's still space. And if you look here in the lower right corner, you can see a screenshot from the tool. Number of sites with where RTC with video exceeds 100% of the RTC allocated bandwidth. So usually we don't plan to use all the bandwidth, but for real-time communication, it should not be more than 30% that is used. So this is a good way to calculate the expected usage, and maybe already now you know that your network will not be able to handle all the load, and that you will have to make changes. Then, next point is the simulation. Run in your production environment during production hours and collect the relevant information. That's the jitter, the packet loss, the latency, and the QoS settings. In our experience, we've seen a lot of customers who told us that they have QoS active, that they tag the packets, that they actually pay their provider, the MPLS providers, for it. But when we tested it, we saw that in some step during the travel of the packet, the QoS packet was actually dropped, and it didn't arrive on the other side, which means that QoS was not applied end-to-end, which basically is a very bad thing, because it means it won't work. I do have here some examples for numbers that we would be looking for. So we're looking for specific numbers for jitter, for the packet loss, for the network latency. Obviously, you need to see these numbers always in context. So if I do a call from Madrid to New Zealand, 200 milliseconds might be fantastic. If I do a call from Madrid to Barcelona, 200 milliseconds will be really poor. So always use this with a grain of salt. My colleague Cornel did this morning a session on networking where he went into these topics for an hour 40, and 15 minutes. So you can see the recording for that. And if you're more interested in what needs to be done on the network side, then I recommend this session. Okay, so you've run your simulation. We always recommend to run this in production, and we run this usually for a full week. For 7 days, so that we can really see at any time of the day, we can do calls from one endpoint to the other. So we will have some probes that simulate calls and will give us this information relevant for real-time communication, what's the jitter, packet loss, and latency, and the QoS setting. So once you have the results, you can make different decisions. Once you can say, well, I want to improve my network, so I'm getting additional bandwidth, I'm changing my QoS setting, getting additional classes, or I give more bandwidth to a specific class, or you can just adjust your link implementation. So you could say, well, this one specific site, there's just not enough bandwidth. So for the time being, I'm not going to deploy to allow these users to use any video. Or you could say, well, I need to use call admission control because I need to limit the amount of bandwidth that is used to a specific site, or you might end up with saying, well, we thought it's really a great idea to centralize everything in one particular country and have everyone calling there. However, we can see that the bandwidth is so expensive that it might make more sense to have in a different location an additional pool and keep the traffic local. So there are a number of things that you can do. The thing is just after doing the network assessment, you really know what you need to do. This is just summary slides. So again, Microsoft Consulting Service is doing such network assessments. Other partners are doing this as well. If you're interested in that, you can talk to me after the session or to your Microsoft representatives. The real benefit of the network assessment is that you reduce the deployment risk. If you just deploy Link and you hope it will work, then you have always the risk that you will fail, and it won't. If you do a network assessment before you actually introduce any telephony, any real-time communication, then you will know upfront Before you need to install a single link client, a single link server, you will know upfront if this will be a success from a networking perspective or not. Obviously, it will help you to promote to get the best user experience, to find out what is the impact of unified communication to environment, and many more. I just think that reducing the risk should be, for everyone who is responsible for a project, the absolute priority. Devices. So today, everyone has a phone, which is the traditional PBX. With Link, we have a lot of devices you can choose from. There is a number of devices that run on USB, so headsets, speaker phones, and so on. There's also a qualification program for that, so you can find this on this URL, and it lists all the devices that have been optimized for Link, and it will tell you, and they will give you certain benefits, like the mute buttons will work for Link, the pickup button will work, you will be able to choose the device and see what device you're using, and they have been tested for quality. So if you use them, you can get sure that you have a good quality. This is another great single point of failure that you can do for your deployment. You invest all this money and time and energy in your Link environment, in your network, and then people just use their $5 or Euro headset or the one they got from the plane, and they wonder that they have a bad experience, or they use the speakers of the laptop. It's quite easy for you to identify that. So if someone tells you, well, I had just such a bad call, and you have a monitoring server, and by the way, you always should have a monitoring server, you can look into the monitoring server, into the database, find the call. It will tell you what device was used, if it was a qualified device or if it was just the internal microphone. And then you can instruct them to use proper. But very important. So USB is great, but you will always have some users who don't like to have USB headsets. They prefer to have a hard phone sitting on the desk. They might require it because their computer might not be running all day. And then they need still to do phone calls. What we have seen in our experience is it works best if you give users a choice. If you create certain packages and say, well, this package with this speaker phone, with this USB headset, is for the type road warrior. And this is where the benefits are. You explain it to them. And other users, they might have the option for an IP phone. It's also very good if you give users the option to test these things. A lot of users who believe that they need an hard phone, they find out eventually that a headset might be even better because then they can talk and type at the same time. If it comes to IP phones, there are two different types. There's the optimized for versus the other compatible IP phones. The optimized phones, they are running a specific software. It's a Microsoft software, so they are running Link software. So the user experience is very similar to what they have in Link, and they get these devices. They support the most common Link features. They support codec mission control. They support all the codecs. Then there are other compatible IP phones. These other compatible IP phones, they can register against Link, but they might not support the same feature set. However, the vendors can decide to implement additional features. For example, there are a lot of phones that give you the ability to add additional buttons where you can start programs, where you can do specific things. I mentioned earlier the scenario of the delegation. So there are other IP phones that give you the option that you can control your delegates or the incoming calls via buttons. So it's hard to say that one is better than the other. It really The question is, what are your requirements, and what of these can meet your requirements better? Usually, we say to plan for about 20% of users requiring to have an IP phone, but this is very, very different from vertical to vertical, from country to country. It depends on the users. If you give users a choice, you have the best chance that they will be successful. You should also plan for things like hot desking and common area phones. So, you know, the lobby phone where you should just call specific phone numbers. We support that in Link. And hot desking would be the scenario where you have an open office where people just come in the morning, they pick any free space, there is a phone, and then they can sign in into the phone, use the phone with their phone number, and after a specific time, the phone automatically signs out. Don't forget analog phones. There are always somewhere these nasty elevator phones or anything else. It's also something that you want to think about. So if we are going to talk about the link pilot, link pilot is a very important phase in your link project. It's when you actually start with real link users, with real users of your company, to see if link is meeting their requirements. In our Microsoft, in my Microsoft brain, there are these two different concepts. There's the proof of concept. The proof of concept probably mostly done in a lab environment where I want to prove that link can be integrated with a specific PBX, and yes, I can call from one side to the other, I do all the tests, and I know it works. The pilot on the other side, I need to get real users, I give these real users scenarios, so that they can test out in their production working day, if they can work with Link, if it meets their requirements, if it makes their life easier, if they want to use that. It's a great opportunity not only to verify everything from a technology point of view, technical point of view, that everything is working, also that you met all the scenarios, but it's also a great opportunity to do actually some marketing for Link, to seed the technology, to ignite people so that they are motivated to use Link, so that they tell other users how great Link is, and they will actually ask you to provide Link to them. In order to have as a successful pilot, it's important to choose the right users. The next slide talks about what the right users are. But you should also focus on user scenarios. So don't just give it to users and say, well, try it out. Also tell them what is it what they can do. And identify the right scenario. For example, the user who spends a lot of time in phone conferences, tell them how he can now schedule a Link conference, so that he can get all the benefits from Link conferencing and show this user how it's better for him to use that. The road warrior, show the road warrior who is on the road a lot how he can benefit from Link taking this great communication tool with him. In order to say at the end of the pilot if it was successful or not, well, you need to have some goals and you need to know how to measure that. So it could be that you want to have a specific number of calls used on Link versus the number of calls they use on their traditional phone. It could be that you ask your users on a regular basis, how much do you like Link? How much did it help you? How much did it improve your working day? Then plan for communications. So you need to tell users what they can do. You need to tell users it will be great to have Link. So we have seen customers who created info desks in the cafeteria so that people, after having lunch, could go there and just learn, hey, there's something new being introduced in our company, something that will help me as a user to be more effective and to have less work in chasing people, because now I can see if they are online or not. Ask the users for feedback and also use it. If they are giving you feedback that they need something, that something is missing, maybe it's just about the training that you need to change and you need to educate users how what they want to achieve, they can do in different ways. Or maybe it turns out that you need to have some third-party application that helps you to achieve what this specific user needs. But first of all, you need to know what it is. Microsoft created this Rollout and Adoption Success Kit, short the RASC. You can find it if you go to aka.ms/link-RASC. And you can find there a lot of information, a lot of templates, project plans, test plans, things like that, what you need to do during your introduction phase to make Link successful. And once again, the pilot is really a great opportunity to do marketing for Link. Who should be in the pilot? So how do I select the users for a successful pilot? I've seen customers who are planning pilots with, let's say, 10 users from the IT department, everyone sitting in the same room. So they start the pilot, they think, wow, it's great, hey, I can call you, hey, I see you on the video and see you at the same time sitting over there. They do that for 5 minutes, and then they stop using it because it's not a real scenario. It doesn't make any sense. You need to identify users from different parts of the company with different skill sets where it makes sense users also who collaborate. Link is great, link conferences. If the user that I need to talk to on a regular basis has also link. So get sure that if you add a user to your pilot, that the persons that he speaks most to, that at least a few of them have also link. Get your senior level involved. I know it's always risky to go to your CXO level and give them this new toy, but if you get the buy-in from those, if you can identify the scenarios that will help them to be successful in their business, then it will be much easier for you to move forward in the project. Find these enthusiastic individuals who are willing to participate and are willing to provide feedback, who can become your link champions that you can use later on to train users, where you can say, well, in your department, there is a link champion. It's Paul. Paul participated in our link pilot. He knows the stuff. You can ask him. He will help you to make link popular. We talked about already workload and scenarios. So for every user, find out what it is that makes link interesting for them, and also find remote users that can use link. Usually for the remote users, it's recommended that they have a higher technical skill, as it will be harder to support them because they are remote. Okay, so let's say you did your pilot, very successful. Now we do a time jump for a few months. Now link is in production, everything is running. Did you think about the support? Did you plan for that? Link, it's not just another Microsoft product. Link has really a lot of dependencies. We spoke about most of them. We have the devices, all these IP phones, coming from different vendors. We have the network, very important for us. We have the gateways. Again, there are different vendors for the gateways. PBXs, so your legacy PBX connected to Link, something is not working, you need to troubleshoot in the PBX, in Link, maybe in both, maybe in none. Difficult situations. Session border controller, SIP trunks, and so on and so on. So as you can see, here are a lot of parts involved that is not what the regular Microsoft Microsoft-minded person can do. So you need a lot of additional skills. And you need to plan, so who will be the single point of contact if I have a link problem, who can help me? And obviously, you can do it in your own company if you have the competency for doing that. But there's also the concept of link-certified support partners. Today, we have about 100. Actually, I think it's 99. About 100. You can find them on this list. They are either regional or worldwide, and they can give you an end-to-end support for every device, for every gateway, SIP trunk, PBX, and so on. Obviously, you need to talk to them to figure out, well, are they active in the regions that I need? Do they support the gateways? Maybe you want to even start this conversation before you invest heavily into gateways, because you need to get sure that whoever it is who will be supporting you, that they support the gateways, the IP phones, and everything else that you're going to use. Usually, they are quite flexible, so if you tell them, well, I want someone who does this part of my support, but we personally still have a support contract for the PBX, so someone else will be doing that, then you will talk with them how they will interface with each other, and so on. But there is some flexibility in terms of support that you can get. Okay, so what did we talk about in this session? We really talked about what do you need to do, what do you need to plan for, so that your link deployment will be successful. What are the options to provide enterprise voice? So we have seen these four or five different options, all of them making sense, having disadvantages, advantages, depending on your requirement, what you want to do. Network, very, very important. You need to plan for a pilot. And all of these are basically, from a high-level perspective, the necessary steps that you need to do to make your Link Enterprise Voice deployment successful. And it will help you to meet business goals, the company goals, and the user requirements. I want to point out a few additional sessions. So yesterday we had a session on high availability and disaster recovery. So if you want to hear more about that, watch this recording. Today in the morning we had the enterprise network requirements for Link 2013. You can also watch the recording. And on Friday we will have a dial plan and voice routing deep dive. I'll be doing that together with my colleague Cornel, where we talk about specifically how do you need to configure your dial plans, how does all this routing works. I will stay here if you have any questions. I will also be on the link booth after the session for the next half hour, hour. So if you have any questions, you're welcome to find me and ask me. So, and I want to thank you very much. One more thing. Please don't forget to fill out your evals. So we appreciate that very much. And with that, I want to thank you.